talking to some of the best voices in Nashville. This is One-on-One with Greg Pogue.
Presented by Freeman Webb.
Also brought to you by
Strike and Spare Family Fun Centers, Bass Tire Company, Sam's Sports Place and Sports Grill, Holiday Inn Express Nashville Airport, Valentino's Ristorante, and Sir Speedy of Music City.
One-on-One with Greg Pogue. Broadcasting live from Roy's Meat Service in East Nashville. Your sports live here on 94.9 The Fan.
And the Game Nashville Sports Network.
Now, here's Greg Pogue.
It is hour number two of our Saturday morning extravaganza here on 94.9 The Fan. Roy's Meat Service in East Nashville, 101 with Greg Pogue. Something I started, 10, 11 years ago, we did it at Bongo Java at the Omni. Todd Rodermill, the crew there. I know that's where the sponsor of the Big Joe and Chase show, now noon to 3 on 102.5.
Hey, that's the Chase and Big Joe show.
What did I say?
You said we don't give Big Joe first billing. Come on now.
And I agree with that. So my bad. Chase and Big Joe, they do their show down there every Thursday. And started that. And it's really unique. We just have people from the community. It could be sports. It could be business. It could be – we don't do politics, but elected officials, entertainers, whatever. And our first guest of the season here at Roy's, Jeff Fisher. Morning, Jeff.
Good morning, Greg. It's an honor to be here to kick this off. This is fun. Saturday morning, it's football season, and we had preseason games last night and all weekend, and yeah, things are going good. Fun time of the year.
Well, I do want to say Roy's, Jeff Roy, Roy's yeah. Meat Service, the official caterer of the Nashville Cats. They do all of our training camp meals, lunch and dinner, the visiting teams, they feed them and everything. And then last Saturday night, Bass Tire Night, Steve Bass, a good friend, supporter of this show, supporter of the Cats, and Jeff Roy, we went to the races at the fairgrounds.
What a blast, too. My first time over there, and it was so much fun, and just got to see a little bit of everything going on. And yeah, it was really, really fun. And you know, between Jeff Roy and Steve Bass, I don't know if we've been able to pull it off the way we did this past season with the Cats. You know, you got to practice, you got to train, you got to do all that kind of stuff, but most importantly, you got to eat. And the way the arena world is set up, the home team has responsibilities as well to take care of the visiting team. And so, Jeff, you know, gosh, we're feeding two teams over it, you know, whether it's municipal or in Clarksville. And so we couldn't have done it without him. We're really, really pleased and honored to be able to partner with Jeff. And then, of course, Steve Bass and his group has just been extraordinary, you know, friends of ours and partners of ours. And I don't know that we would have pulled it off the way we did this past year.
Well, and part of it, we had some skin in the game. Jackson Boone Racing had the Cats logo on the car, and he had the best
98
car.
98 freaking laps. He was in second place.
And it was just two cars, and he couldn't get past it, and then he got.
We were halfway down to the winner's circle, and you turned and got out of there before everybody else did. But yeah, what a great experience! So yeah, it all ties together, and I'm just really it's just fun every which way you turn. We're just so thankful of people that wanted to wrap their arms around what we were doing.
How long, or maybe you're still in the process, have you weaned yourself of what you would normally be doing in your life from high school, from junior pro to high school to college at Southern Cal to the Bears to coaching, head coaching, everything? Having seven grandkids helps.
Well, yeah, it does. Everything is great. I'm really enjoying myself. You know, if you're not careful, you can fill your day up really quick between grandkids and, you know, helping out different programs and things like that. You know, I've been around the country, you know, with small programs and got involved in a program in San Antonio and Incarnate Word, and they're making a move, and there's all kinds of fun. I mean, by the way, that's where Cam Ward got to start, you know. So, there's just a lot going on, but, you know, I've been able to choose. And people are saying, what are you doing? Why are you doing all this kind of stuff? Well, as coaches, you know, as a coach, what you do is you help people. You know, that's kind of in your blood. You help a player, you help a staff, you help an organization. That's what you do. And so, you know, I haven't stopped doing that. But this little thing we got going has been really fun.
Well, does that take because it's there's a there's competitiveness because you want to see succeed at business, right? There's that side of it, but also you want to have a winning team. Cats this year went to the championship game, lost 60-57 to Albany, undefeated Albany, by the way. And does that replace it a little bit?
Yeah, it does. I mean, I'm not looking. I don't wake up every day looking to replace what I was doing in the NFL world for however long I was in there. But I just really enjoy meeting people. This indoor world is completely different. It's an intimate world we talk about all the time. This past week, I was in Beaumont, Texas. We brought another franchise on board to AF1 and going to head up to, you know, Northern Kentucky. And, you know, we've got two or three more that, you know, we've thrown out there kind of, you know, from a announcement standpoint, but not official. So we got a couple more that are going to be official. So our league's growing, and that's really exciting. So, you know, the responsibility I have at the league level is one thing, and then just the passion that I have and that I'm sharing with you with respect to the Cats and bringing them back here has been a lot of fun. And on top of that, I mean, I've got my little ones are over at CPA. I overheard you talking about their game against Oakland here coming up, and you know, my son's over there, and so yeah, we just got a lot going. I mean, this clearly, you know, we made Nashville our home when we got off the airplane, you know, back in 97 or wherever it was, and it is our home. And so it's just been fun for me to get out and you know, develop relationships with Jeff Roy and Steve Bass through, you know, thankfully for you and everybody here in town that really has a, you know, has an affection for, you know, what we did, you know, what I did, but more importantly, you know, what the new little thing we got going. So looking forward, really, you know, this August right now is kind of this time of the year. You're just starting to kick everything off. It's high school football. It's preseason NFL. Colleges are ramping up. You know, obviously I got interest in the Bowling Green program, you know, with Eddie and my son up there. So, yeah, just a lot of football and a lot of grandkids. And then here and there I'll find a time and a place to go fish with you.
I can't fly fish. I am actually serious. That's a little sidebar. We're going to get to this a little later. Whenever I get to go to the Madison River, to your, you know, you blindfold people to take them there. That way they won't know how to get there.
That's right. Yeah.
In your little honey holes. And I know you guys have one up. You and Brandon have one up on the Caney Ford.
Yes, we do.
That runs from the dam to the river, somewhere in between.
Yeah, somewhere in there. Yeah. Somewhere in there.
That little 25 miles.
You're
going to
find us. Yes.
Yeah, and the monsters you guys are pulling out of there. I like in the last 2 years of the indoor game with the last year's iteration of the Cats, the league, we learned really, really quick in the league where the league was malfunctioning at the hot top level. You became the interim commissioner, landed the plane on last season. So it's like the flight took off in turbulent weather. We smoothed out and landed the plane the last two games, the regular season, and then the following weekend, the playoff game, we had, well, 6,000 capacity. We did. These are sold tickets, 5,200 the last regular, and then without any marketing all did 5,600 for that playoff game. So just for the Cats' perspective, the plane was landed. Darren Arbett did a great job on the football side. Bobby Dvorsny, our partner, CEO. It just seemed like we came out of this past season. Of course, our partnership with Cromwell, our games there, the championship game, Chase and Big Joe, we brought them up to Albany, and that game was on 102.5, the game, so we landed the plane.
And we landed the plane, and we landed the plane in an airport we're just sitting there waiting with our arms open. So one of the things that's interesting is that, you know, as we worked our way through everything that was going on 2 years ago and then worked our way into AF1, we realized that this market was so important to the future, the success of the league. And without what we did this past year, I don't know where AF1 would be. But we got Nashville back on their feet. We got the Cats back on their feet. We got to the championship game, as you said, and now we're really looking forward to what's ahead. I alluded to new franchises joining the league that's coming, and this league's going to go places where nobody ever thought it would or gave it a chance right now.
Well, I know there are things to come. But Beaumont, Texas, you were down there, and then this has been reported. Corpus Christi is moving to Cincinnati. Northern Kentucky. I love their name.
Yeah.
The Kentucky Barrels.
Yeah,
and they're going to play at the University of Northern Kentucky's arena, really nice on-campus arena there in Covington. Of course, the Cincinnati Airport's in Covington or Florence right there on the other side of the river. That's a great market.
Yeah, it's a really good market. We've got one that's come in as well in Michigan. So, as we've talked numerous times.
Well, you threw
times,
it out there, Callum. You want to say it? You just threw it in Michigan. Do we guess or can we?
We can guess. We can throw it out, but we're going to officially announce it here this week, hopefully. But what we're doing is we're trying to grab franchises in geographical areas that takes the travel burden that makes it easier. You can bus trip here, bus trip there. So the thing is it's falling together nicely.
Well, Cincinnati will be a great rival. It's a 5-hour bus ride and. And that's one of the fixed costs of this league is travel.
Yes, it is.
And Jeff Fisher, 101 with Greg Pogue. Do you watch games? I know you get asked a lot of these questions. We're going to tell some stories, or you are, but in a minute. Do you watch them analytically, or can you step back and take your analytical hat off and watch it more for the watching the game?
Yeah, I mean, if you're talking about NFL, I'll get into the games, but usually, I'll sit down and either before the end of the first half or the end of the game, I'm always watching that part of it and watch games being managed and so on and so forth and mismanaged and then kind of watch, staying in tune with the rules and those kind of things, what the league's doing. And I this last couple of weeks when I saw that the NFL was going to be eliminating the chain crew from its games because they have a better way to do it through technology and drones and camera angles, and so they'll be able to go boom right there, first down, yes or no, and they move on. That bothered me a little bit. It's kind of, are we leaning towards, are we making ourselves, I say we, is the league making itself vulnerable to that Star Wars game that we so wanted to avoid for 20 years while I was on the competition committee? I'd have to say they gave up. I don't know what we're going to do, the kind of effect that's going, the far-reaching effect that's going to have on the college game, on the local game, and the high school game. I mean, are you just going to eliminate the chain crew?
I'm going to tell a real quick story. Where was it? Were we in Billings? Where were we? They one road game, and I don't know if you were with us or not, they couldn't find the chains. They couldn't find the chains.
Yeah.
So they got two hockey sticks and measured 10 yards. With
duct
a rope.
Taped them to the bottom, and
there we go.
Yeah, and they dropped them down. Yeah, yeah, they found a way. Yeah, but
and then they, about midway through the second quarter, here comes the change.
Yeah, somebody had a night. Somebody said, "Why don't you go to a high school and go get some change and bring them in here?" And they did. They got them in there, and they went on. But yeah, you got to find a way. But anyway, as far as watching, I'm not paying particular attention to what's going on in the preseason here in the NFL right now. I mean, everybody handles preseason different. And the one thing, we all understand is when the players step on the field, they're going full speed. And so we understand injury situations and injury potential. And if somebody's going to grade Cam Ward, for example, based on his first two preseason performances, it's not fair. I mean, they don't want to get him hit. He's going to spin the ball around a little bit, get in, get off. But most of their work's getting done on the practice field. So, preseason's one thing. I mean, you brought up the Bears. I got a phone call about a month ago, and And I can't believe this has been so long, but they got the 40th anniversary of the 85 Bears, and I'm going to go up for a Monday night game in Minnesota against the Vikings, and they're going to honor the 85 Bears. And it's going to be really exciting thing for me to look forward to personally, because I haven't seen these guys in so many years. So going to go back and, you know, have a little anniversary thing and, you know, kind of rub arms and shoulders and talk about old times with all the old Bears. So I'm looking forward to that. And then, boom, we're going to rush. We'll run off and continue in the AF1 enthusiasm and keep that momentum going as we push into 2026. So a lot of stuff going on for me personally, and it's just fun. But most importantly, and I really enjoy where we've been the last 2 years, especially with where we're sitting here right now with Jeff.
101 with Greg Pug, presented by Freeman Webb. We are at Roy's Meat Service in East Nashville. More with Jeff Fisher coming up right here on 94.9 The Fan.
Jackson will be the man in motion. 6 seconds left in the Arena Crown Championship game. He takes off. Kolka looking that way. Robert Jones Jr. wide open. Yes! Touchdown.
My goodness.
2 seconds left on the clock. Jones Jr. with the touchdown. It's now a 5-point game.
Chase McKay, play-by-play from the championship game, and Big Joe adding his laugh and oh my, that's the depth of his analyst.
And these games, that there's a lot of times there's you've done them, and there's what do you say when all this happens? I mean, we've had, you know, I've seen 21 points scored in, you know, 15 seconds, you know, at the end of these games, and how you keep track of it and monitor it, it's just amazing. But yeah, we came down to the end, you know,
60-57.
It was a valiant effort, you know, especially considering the fact that, you know, Albany was loaded. They were loaded from the start. It's a storied franchise. You know, their players, they just do it right. And, you know, Albany had games where they got close to 100. They had a score.
No, it's crazy.
You know, it was. But they were a powerhouse. And for Coach Arbett and his staff to do what they did second half of the season. Remember, we had a week of camp and we're, you know, late and everything was going on. And man,
then off to Dodge City.
Yeah, you go there and we're supposed to go to Corpus and that didn't happen. Go to Dodge and he's had a week of practice and he's competitive. But he hung in there. He kept that roster together and got him to the end. And, you know, last play of the game against a team that was undefeated. That was a valiant effort. And
yeah,
so
quarterback Tyler Kolka coming in made the big difference.
Yeah, he really did.
We had three different quarterbacks start the first three games, and just because of that early, early start. 101 with Greg Pogue, Jeff Fisher, and all this presented by Freeman Webb, and we are at Roy's Meat Service in East Nashville. 9-10 prep football talk with Coach Bubba. You just finished filming or something with Netflix about Vince Young. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I did. A group reached out to me, you know, 6 or 8 weeks ago, and they were doing it's the Untold. It's that feature. And, you know, somebody decided that they wanted to do something with respect to Vince and his career. And, you know, it all started, you know, with that championship game. We all remember it. It's USC and Texas, and probably one of the most storied, you know, most exciting. We know from a personnel standpoint, this championship game had so many players that went on to the NFL. And when I remember watching it at Coach Alan Lowry's house, and you know, we're just starting the, you know, the off season program, watching this game, and I remember when that thing was over, saying, "I want everybody off of both of those teams." You know, you want them, and you know, we got a few of them, but it was. Was all based on their premise, the Netflix and the stories based on Vince's career and what happened. And Vince has got things going now. He's got a 14-year-old son. He's a proud dad, and he just wanted to kind of set the record straight. And they wanted to kind of figure out, you know, what happened and why. And so they reached out to me, and I was a little hesitant, a little reluctant to do it. You know, I had what it ended up as a real good experience when, you know, we did the McNair feature several years ago. Different producers, different directors, different storyline, and So I just felt like, you know, after having some discussion with him, that I would be happy to, you know, help Vince put things in perspective. They knew, as I told them, that, you know, you're going to ask me something, I'm going to tell you the truth, and, you know, some, you know, I'm not going to sugarcoat anything. But I did have an opportunity in the preparation process for the, you know, for the shoot that we did a couple weeks ago at the farm. I did. I went down memory lane, and, you know, over the years, you know, the years can, you know, you can confuse what happened in 06 and 07 and 08. And I got back into it. It was a good experience for me to go back through Vince's rookie year in 26, and then what happened 27, then of course 28, and then Kerry stepping in, and then, you know, we go 10-0, and now people are saying, oh, you know, are they gonna, you know, and you remember this, so they start talking about the Miami Dolphins. I mean, here's an undefeated team, and they're gonna threaten it. Not so fast. We went 10-0. We lost to the Jets and Brett Favre in week 11. That's when I parachuted on the practice field, all kind of stuff. But we got to go back through, you know, those years and, you know, those games and, you know, and how important it was and the pressure that actually was on Vince, you know, to come in here as a starter. And then 5 or 6 weeks into his rookie year, we go, you know, we're going to play Baltimore, and of course Steve McNair is coming back to town, and Vince idolized and grew up with, you know, in Steve's camp. So there was just a lot of storylines going on, but I really enjoyed the feature. I don't know when they're going to, when it's going to air. I would assume it's going to air sooner than later, you know, from a timing standpoint, but really enjoyed going back and looking at those games and, you know, what happened in some of these games and with respect to Vince, you know, down 14 points and, you know, out of a ball game. And then all of a sudden, you know, we win the game, and Vince does things, you know, completely unorthodox. But, you know, and at that point it was like people saying, man, this guy, you know, he may not understand everything, the concepts and things like that, and do exactly what you want to do. But this young man has that rabbit's foot in his back pocket, and he pulls some games out. So, I'm looking forward to, you know, to see how they put it all together. It's really informative, and, you know, I wanted to treat Vince and, you know, his family and everything with the utmost respect. He dedicated his life as best he could to our program, and, you know, he got us in the playoffs, you know, in his second year against the Chargers. He went 10-6, and third year we, you know, we had that 13-3 season, you know, and at Kerry, you know, Kerry was clearly responsible for that. He came in, won the first game against Jacksonville, and then, you know, won 9 straight, and then we lost one, and then we pushed in, and then unfortunately, you know, we've had some playoff losses. You know, that year 08, we beat Baltimore 13-10 during the regular season, came back, played Baltimore again, and, you know, we had the injuries, we had, you know, and lost 13-10, and, you know, we had, I mean, Saragusa twist CJ's ankle, and CJ can't finish, and two guys that protected the ball better than most guys I've been around, Algie Crumpler and Lindell White, put the ball on the ground in the second half, and we end up losing 13-10. The season's over, and who knows what would happen after that.
Did Vince unravel a little bit under the pressure of what was expecting of him? Is that fair?
Yeah, there was a lot of things going on. I mean, Vince had some, you know, fairness to Vince, he had some distractions in his life and things that he couldn't manage. And, you know, that's where, you know, I mean, I learned a lot from the experience, and I'd learned a lot previously to that, understanding that, you know, your role as a head coach is to, you know, first and foremost, create an environment for your players where they're emotionally, mentally, spiritually, physically prepared just for the day. Nothing beyond that, and then help them to deal with their individual personal distractions or a team distraction that can, you know, can cripple a team. And so, you know, Vince had some difficulty managing, you know, his time, and was distracted, and, you know, he got in the wrong place at the wrong time on a couple occasions, and then some things just honestly happened. to him like they could anybody else. I mean, he was late for a flight. We missed a flight to Baltimore. To Philadelphia. He missed a flight, and that had a profound effect on him for several weeks. But we go to Baltimore. We go to Philadelphia, and we win. We win.
That's got to be a wake up call. Hey, because his whole life, he's every door open for him because of his ability.
Yeah, it did. And, and so there was, there were just, it just was hard for him. Just, you would think as soon as he got his feet on the ground and just started to figure out, something else would come up. And so it did. And then, by and large, the most important thing to me that came out of this, the interview and the feature that we did was him, and I just want to make sure that he's in a good place right now, and he is. He's the father to a son that he never had, and that's the most important thing right now. So, and I painted a realistic, honest picture, I believe, and so we'll see how they cut it up.
Jeff Fisher, 101 with Greg Pogue here at Roy's Meat Service, 94.9 The Fan. I don't know if cathartic is the right word, but going through the Steve McNair, the thing you did with Netflix a couple years ago, how much did that impact you going into that kind of detail? Because you were very, very specific of how you wanted that to be handled, and it wasn't as much about, or you didn't want it to be about the end.
Right. I was, when they reached out to me, I was really hesitant, and I didn't want to. I didn't need to go to revisit everything that happened surrounding his death, and I had agreed to, provided that this was about his life, this was about him as a teammate, this was about his career and everything that he did, rather than go back and revisit it. And so we had an understanding there. And so I we did the same thing. I mean, we would spend hours and hours and hours doing, putting it together. And there were times during the recording that we just had to stop. I mean, it was really emotional. I mean, I had cameramen and directors that had lost their poise and their composure because it was so emotional. And so I felt at the end that this was going to be exactly what we said it was going to be. And then I was brought to my attention just how they named it, and the feature was known as and released as The Murder of Steve McNair, and that didn't sit well with me. So I didn't watch it. I just purposely just kind of stayed away from it. It had been out for 2 or 3 weeks, and it was the top of their second rated NFL or Netflix feature in their market. And then I sat down and watched it, and I was okay with it after. But they're gonna sell a product. They're gonna sell a market, and naming it what they did was one thing, but the content and everything was another. When it was said and done, I was okay with the content. And there were so many people. I wanted to protect Michelle. I wanted to protect people that were intimate and close to Steve, and through that. And I didn't want to revisit everything again. And in essence, we didn't have to. And there's all kinds of theories. I know what the truth is. I spent time with him. I was, this all happened when I was on a USO tour, and I had seen Steve, at our softball game a month before I left to go on the road and talk to him, and things were good. And, I had had a conversation with him before going overseas on the USO tour. He wanted to bring the boys out on the 4th of July and fish at the farm. And we're good. Yeah, go ahead. You know where the keys are. You know the gate code, and go do that. And then that night, before that was when everything went down. And I found out on the tarmac in Kuwait trying to get back from a USO tour in Iraq.
Yeah. Jeff Fisher, 101 with Greg Pogue, our guest, Roy's Meat Service. You mentioned the 40-year anniversary. This is a little tease. I want you to tell the best Walter Payton story, okay? You think of one, or a Bears. I want a Bears/Walter Payton story. Coming up after the break, right here on 94.9 The Fan.
You're listening to One-on-One with Greg Pogue.
Presented by Freeman Webb.
Your sports live here on 94.9 The Fan.
And the Game Nashville Sports Network.
We're not here to start no trouble. We're just here to do the Super Bowl show.
Well, they call me Sweetness, and I like to dance. Running the ball is like Mickey Mo Mance. We had the goal since training camp to give Chicago a Super Bowl champ. And we're not doing this because we're greedy. The Bears are doing it to feed the needy. We didn't come here to look for trouble. We just come here to do the Super Bowl show.
This is Speedy Willie.
Where your part in there in the Super Bowl show?
Nah, you know what?
You were in a cast,
I couldn't,
right?
Dance, you know, and they put that together. It was really kind of fun to sit there from, you know, from outside in watching it all go together. And you know, the previous year we lost to the 49ers at championship game, and that was a hard loss on everybody. And you know, it just, everybody knew that, you know, as soon as we landed back in Chicago after that loss, that there was no stopping this team. And you know, that was just part of the, you know, the everything that went took place prior to the 85 season. And so with respect to Walter, you know, there's no reason that a California super a California surfer boy that goes to the Bears would have anything in common with Walter Payton. But for some reason, when I got there as a rookie, he kind of put his arm around me. And so we ended up, over the time I was there, we ended up hunting together a bunch of times. He was an outdoor guy and just a phenomenal person. And so year two, year three, things kind of settled down. We're just kind of doing our stuff, coaching change. Mike Dick is there. And, you know, we were in training camp and stayed after practice, a bunch of guys, and you know, maybe a handful of guys on the field, and just teasing each other. And so Walter was a gymnast. People don't know that. He was a gymnast at Jackson State. He was 5'10". He was about 205 pounds and had little bitty feet. I can talk about that. But Walter was a phenomenal athlete. He'd stand at the 40-yard line, and literally he would take a ball in his hand, and he'd hit the upright from 50 yards away. He could throw. It was amazing. So one thing led to another. We were kind of teasing him, and he was bragging a little bit about this and that. And so there was a challenge on the field. There was six or eight of us, and it was him. And said, okay, well, we'll bet you $100 a man here. You say you're good. You walk on your hands, da-da-da. Walter jumped off, went from his feet to his hands on the goal line. It took him some time, but he went 100 yards on his hands. He walked across the field on his hands, not his feet. 100 yards, took it probably 20 minutes, you know, but he did it, and it was just one of the most amazing things I'd ever seen.
And he picked up several hundred bucks along the way.
Yeah, he did. So, you know, I go back in there during the off season, and I'm going to do a workout. There was no off season program. There was nothing, and there was nobody in the building. I went into the equipment man, and I said, you know, his name was Ray, and I go, Ray Bob, I said, is there any way you could give me some insoles for my shoes, my feet? The ground's frozen. I need insoles, you know. And he looked at me. He called me a number of names, and he said, come with me. And he takes me to Walter's, over to Walter's locker. And he pulls out one of Walter's shoes. Now, the shoes that Walter was wearing at the time, they were the old spot built. They were hard bottom. It had seven cleats on the bottom of it, and it was a high shoe. It was came up to, you know, to the, it was a high rise shoe. And he says to me, he goes, put your hand inside the shoe. And so I stick my hand inside of Walter's shoe. There's no one in the locker room at all, and I pulled it out. I felt these nails and things in there. Well, Walter would take this spot built shoe, and he would pull the insole out of the shoe, and then he would put on, I remember the white sanitary socks that we all wore in playing baseball, you know, those real thin socks. Walter would put a sanitary sock on, and then he would put his foot in the shoe, and then he would spat it. And basically what was in the bottom of the shoe with the insoles out was the screw bed from the cleats. And so you've got these nails sticking out, these little nails and things like that sticking out in the inside of the shoe. Walter's foot goes on this bear, there's in a shoe with no insole, spats it all up, and he goes, he had to feel the every single cleat. Now, these cleats were an inch long. They had metal tips on them. They were screw-in cleats, and he had to feel every single cleat in the bottom of his feet. His feet were all calloused, you know, from this and everything. And I'm literally amazed and shocked at what he's playing and practice and what he's wearing on his feet. And Ray, in the equipment manager, in an attempt to not give me insoles, was trying to imply that I was less a man than Walter was because of the way he wore the shoe. And so we're all said and done, and I said, Ray, are you done? And he said, yeah, I'm done. I said, well, could I have my insoles, please? But it was just amazing, the little things like that, the way he lived, the way he trained, the teammate that he was, the practical joker that he was just off the charts. And, you know, he loved everybody, loved the game. He, as I'll never forget, my, you know, they kept the rookies down in a basement underneath the facility. And, you know, we just would sit in there after the morning practice. We'd have lunch, and we'd just go in there. And afraid of being late and everything else, he'd just fall asleep down there. And every single day, somewhere in that time period, Walter, you would hear the door open, and then you'd just cringe. You'd cover your ears because he'd drop an M80 down there and make blow up the, you know, the rookie locker room and do things like that. But one of the greatest teammates you could ever have. And then obviously his life was cut short. I did continue a relationship with him, you know, when I was when we were here. You know, we had Jared on our team. We signed Jared, out of his son, out of University of Miami, Willis McGahee. He had gotten hurt. Jared ended up starting. He was a soccer player, and you know, and his agent called, who was with the Bears at one time, and said, you know, hey, I'm looking for a place for him for training camp. And I said, well, let me check around. Let me look at rosters. Let me see where the best fit is. And then call me back if you don't have any luck. Well, he couldn't get Jared, Walter Payton's son, into a training camp after his senior year at University of Miami. And I realized that these people, these coaches, these GMs don't want to give him a chance because they don't want to be the GM that cut Walter Payton's son. So I brought Jared in. We changed his body. Knowing we were going to go to Houston and play the Texans, and they were just getting started. They weren't. I felt pretty good about the outcome of that game. But looking at it, I felt like Jared would have an opportunity to maybe get in the game. So I signed him off the practice squad, brought him to active roster, called his mom, called Connie. We flew her down to Houston. And late in the game, Jared got in the game, and I think he had an 8-yard touchdown run. It was his only touchdown he scored in the NFL in his short career. But it really kind of – it was full circle, and I was able to give that family what they needed to get some closure, to get Jared the opportunity. And it was just – Connie was there, and it was just a great thing that happened. So I
85 team, I guess everybody's going to look at 72 Dolphins undefeated, right? A lot of people think the 85 Bears best team ever.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you go 15-1 during the regular season, and you know, the only loss coincidentally came to Miami down there. And Jim was hurt. McMahon was hurt. Didn't play in the game until the fourth quarter. He'd been out all night. He had, I think Jim was still, I don't think he would have passed a blood alcohol test had he gone on the field in the fourth quarter. But he went in, and, you know, we lost the game, yeah. The Dolphins. And that was Buddy. That was, you know, in retrospect, it was all Buddy. Buddy was so hard-headed that he didn't want to match up with the 3 and 4 wide receivers. He wanted his base. He wanted Singletary to play deep half, and, you know, he got Wilbur to cover a receiver and all that kind of stuff. And, yeah, we just fell short in that game. But after that, there was no stopping that team.
Take a break, be back, and wrap it up. 101 with Greg Pogue, Jeff Fisher, Roy's Meat Service, East Nashville, every Saturday morning, 9 to 10, Prep Football Talk, presented by Freeman Webb, Coach Bubba Spears, and in this show, one-on-one. More, and we'll wrap it up, coming up on 94.9 The Fan.
Do the Titans have a miracle left in them in what has been a magical season to this point? If they do, they need it now. Christie kicks it high and short. Going to be fielded by Lorenzo Neal at the 25.
Yeah,
pitches it back to Wycheck. He throws it across the field to Dyson.
He's got something.
30,
he's
40,
got something.
50.
He's got it.
40,
he's got
30,
it.
20. 10.
He's got
5,
it.
End zone. Touchdown Titans. There are no flags on the field. It's a miracle. Tennessee has pulled a miracle.
Heath pulls a hamstring and a upper adductor. Wow. And I want to close it with that. We're not going to break down. We just got about 4 or 5 minutes left. But you, later that night, you've told the story, watching it on TV, and Brandon, who's now the defensive coordinator with Eddie George of at Bowling Green State University, you about paddled him at home that night, right? How old was he, 10, 12, maybe?
14.
14, yeah.
His responsibility that year on the sideline, we were, you know, we were still doing the Polaroid, so we had a guy taking – three different shots of every play, and so his responsibility was Polaroids, and he would make sure that the coaches had the Polaroids and they're in the books, and he was doing stuff, and he was busy, he was relentless, and he did a really good job. So the game's over, we're at the house, and you name it, we got everybody there, and it's a crazy place, and we had TV up in the kitchen, and Brandon's walking by, and then we're pouring some really good wine, and I'm not going to name drop and tell you who's there, but it was quite a group, and I hear Brandon go, "There I am again, there I am again, look, I'm on TV," and I go, "Wait a minute, where are you?" And I'm seeing the review. The replay went 100 times an hour. I mean, it was And I can see him, and he starts like on the 30-yard line of the bench area, and you know where the play was going right to left, and he's jumping up and down. He's kind of working. Now he's out of the bench area, and he's out of the white, but he's kind of jumping up and down as Kevin and you know and everybody's doing their thing and the touchdown. I go, "That's you?" I go, "You left the bench area. What are you doing out of the – if that official just happened to bump you there and you're out of the bench, right, none of this would – and I felt so bad. He started quivering. His lip was quivering. He's like – and I go, "Oh, no, 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 I'm just kidding. It would have been assessed on the kickoff, and you were totally okay." But that was kind of one of those memories and those stories that I told him. So anytime you watch to see the replay, you can see this young man jumping up and down the bench,
running,
like everybody else.
Yeah, running down the sideline.
And everybody knew exactly where they were. When this whole thing happened, we can go in that.
I was
forever.
Standing with Greg Ruff and Hope Hines. There's a picture of George Walker with the Tennessean, and Dyson's right in front of me because the 2 minute warning, the media comes down on the field.
Yeah.
So Eddie, Bowling Green State, Brandon, new
venture.
The run at TSU now up in.
Yeah, they're up there, and they're they're just wrapping up camp, and they've got a challenging a big challenge ahead of them. The cupboards were bare when they got up there, and they're doing their best to bring some players in there. It's a NIL world, and they don't have the money yet, but I think from a coaching standpoint, they'll find a way as long as they can keep people healthy. He's happy with what he's got going defensively, and offensively, we'll just see where they go, but it's a new opportunity for Eddie. Clyde went up there, Clyde Simmons, Joe Bowden. Yeah, and so a lot of the staff, the Tennessee State staff, is up there, and, they're having fun. So we'll see how that goes. I'm going to go up for the first two or three games of the regular season.
Well, they play at Cincinnati, and then week four they play in Louisville. So that's just a bop up I-65 there.
They got Liberty, Lafayette, and they got Toledo. And they got, if they can stay healthy, I mean, they're always – I think realistically the picture painted is, oh, boy, this is going to be hard. But they found a way the last couple of years, obviously. They got in the championship and went to – lost to the Grizzlies and University of Montana, Brandon's alma mater, and so he'll find a way. He'll pull it out. He'll find a way to get them back on track.
And he's earned it. He, from starting out on your staffs, Titans, Rams, and then working. Think of the Jim Schwartz, Gunther Cunningham, Dave McGinnis,
Matt Burke, Chuck Cecil. I mean, he's been,
Schwartz.
Schwartzy. He was in Detroit for a year with Schwartzy and Gunther, and so, there's nothing about defense he doesn't get, and because of what he's the type of offenses, the diversity of the offense from a week to week basis that he's facing, he's got it. He's got that thing. He knows what he's doing. He's got a great relationship, great rapport with the players, and he's a game planning dude, man. He can figure it out. So I'm anxious to watch and see what he does.
He's so, though, during the game, he's not very excitable. He's really calm, laid back. How many flags did he get last year?
He only got one.
Just got one?
Yeah, got one. Defense intercepted a play in the end zone to win the game, and there was some kind of joke going on with the players, and he had some gyration that was misunderstood. And the classic, I'm watching it. I was fishing someplace, and one of the only ones I missed, and I'm watching it, and the referee comes out and announces the penalty, and he doesn't say on the, you know, the 15-yard penalty on sportsmanlike conduct on Tennessee State bench. He says, he takes it a step further. He says, on the defensive coordinator. So yeah. Brennan has a great relationship with officials. He loves the officiating crew. He loves the game.
That's from you.
He knows the rules, and he establishes what's going to happen early on. So he gets a little, he gets a lot of leeway, gets, you know, a lot of room for discussion and name calling and all that kind of stuff. But
Jeff, thanks for doing this.
Thank you.
Hey, off and running Saturday mornings, 94.9 The Fan, 9 to 10. Prep football talk and then 101 with Greg Pogue, both hours presented by Freeman Webb. Chase McKay, program director, thank you. And hey, everybody, have a great weekend.